You're listening to Talk the Walk, the podcast putting legs on social work in Indigenous communities through story. From Darwin, Australia, this is your host, Lucy Van Sambeek. Hello and welcome back to Talk the Walk. This afternoon I'm joined by Elaine Tiparui. Elaine's an elder of the Tiwi Island community of Wurrumyanga. Elaine's been involved with the Alcoholics Anonymous movement on the Tiwi Islands since the 1980s, with connections to the Daly River people, Port Keats, Turtle Creek and Broome. Elaine trained as an Aboriginal health worker in the 1990s. It was also around this time that she worked as a volunteer for Catholic Care for many years with their alcohol and drug programs. In 2008, Elaine joined Relationships Australia, working alongside me doing some counselling work with children and family bush camps. From 2010, Elaine and I also worked very closely on the development of resources for what is now known as the Healing Our Children Project, which supports vulnerable women with young children who have lived with violence. When this project was funded in 2015, Elaine was volunteering her time as a cultural advisor and a member of the evaluation team. Elaine, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Elaine, you've been involved in supporting and caring for men, women and children in your community in such a variety of ways over a long period of time. I'm wondering, why was it important for you to do the work that you have been doing?
I think that working along with women, especially young mum with kids and some young men as well, to look at things happening in our community, because today we can see we need to help those young people. Even like I'm the mother with three children, grandchildren, we can help others to come in knowing about what is the problem. Because today we can see it, a lot of things happen. So what makes it right is to come together as women, children, knowing that this affects everyone.
For those people who don't know about Wurrumyanga on the Tiwi Islands, can you give us a bit of a picture of what that community is like?
It's a new name given from Tiwi ownership land. Now Wurrumyanga to be called Nuyo community, but the silent before as community. That's when we start this program for drug and alcohol. There may be, say, 1,600, maybe 1,700 people living on Baptist Island, and a lot of people sort of do their own things and, you know, like maybe go out to a family's home or meeting them, saying hello to them.
And there's a bit of a history with the Catholic Church on the island, isn't there? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I used to be one of the dormitory girls in dormitory, living with the nuns, priests, and our way of living with the priests, with the nuns, is to be a really strict place, you know, like we go to church, go to school, and sometimes we don't go out to the camp where we see our parents, because before we didn't connect with that, but at the weekend we can go out, permission from the nuns, and be back at the dormitory by 6 o'clock, time when we were young, so young, 13-year-old. 14, that's when we start to look in a place where we stayed in the convent, doing things that they want us to do, you know, like maybe disciplines, knowing about the right way.
So the nuns were quite disciplinary in their approach to
in school
you
as well,
in the dormitories.
In the school as well, in the dormitory.
Yeah, I know that you have a lot of respect for the nuns of that time.
Maybe respectful for ourselves, learn about who we are, so we can believe when we get a bit older, and then get job. That may be the one that it can give us. But we speak in English, not Tiwi. Tiwi later when we went home.
Right. And can you describe the country where Wurrumyanga is situated? What have you got around you in terms of the country around there?
I think around it's got beaches and land, and we got new community at Wenku and at the side of Melbourne, Palangapi, Kataramu, the school, college, Palakapri, another community. We belong to one Kiwi.
Yeah, so you've named a few of the other communities on the Tiwi Island. Some of those are on Melville Island. So you're very much Tiwi people together. Yeah, I was just thinking about those beautiful beaches that you've got nearby. A lot of the people go fishing, don't they, down at those beaches?
I think a lot of people love to go down the beach, Tanti Beach, especially when we camped last some years ago at Mirindo. Where the house is, people can go there and Pokroi and Ponapi. Just we go out sitting around the, you know, country. Belongs to people. And then pay Pokroi, and some people live there, some people sort of live at Ponapi. It's a beautiful beach, beautiful place. There we can relax, leave things behind, go forward and believe in yourself, is the country belongs to you, and someone that we call out for, someone we need coming into with us, like friends that we meet at workplace. We can still take them out bush and call out in our ancestors that this, we're looking after each other, looking after person. Many at night come and look, make a fire or whatever when we sleep.
It sounds like you get out bush quite a bit.
What?
Yep. So there's two areas of discussion I'd like to explore with you today. One is your experience of working alongside non-Indigenous social workers and counsellors, and the other is exploring the idea of recovery and healing from trauma and what knowledge the Tiwi people are bringing to this work. So if I can just start firstly with your experience of working with mainstream non-government organisations such as Relationships Australia, and what do you think are the sorts of things that social workers and counsellors need to keep in mind when they come out to your community or another community like yours? What do they need to keep in mind?
We can sort of say we need those people to come because we need to help them two ways, non-Indigenous people or Tiwi. So we can understand about their knowledge and we can give our knowledge to them.
Right. So you acknowledge that people coming to the community have some knowledge that they could possibly share with you, but also that it's reciprocal, that Tiwi people have knowledge to share with them. Is that right?
When they come in as new workers, then we meet together and we can ask the women to sort of cross cultures because we can come in through and give them our knowledge about our way. And then we say we respect them to come in and we respect each other as Tiwi women, the Tiwi people. So we say this is a new one coming to help us. So we need to help them because our people need help.
So I remember the first time that I lobbed up to the community, the first time I ever went out there, and you and some of the other women that volunteered for Catholic Care at that time sat me down. And we basically had lots of cups of tea, lots of stories were shared. And I didn't really do much work until about 6 months in because I was doing a lot of listening. And like you say, listening to the wisdom and the knowledge that you have about how things run there, about how programs worked and what your dreams were, I guess, were for putting programs in place for Tiwi people. So is that an example, Elaine, of what you're trying to describe when someone comes, the first steps really in that person sitting down and just really listening to what the strong women have to say?
I think it's like encouragement, identify who they are and ourselves we can identify it because working in both ways and then listening to us and then show the way we are working on it. You know, we don't want to leave nothing. We need to believe because you both sides, we can work together as a team. Team. I believe because if you want to help you, we won't have anything because knowledge is understanding about the culture and our way of living. People live a spiritual way of understanding and believe in their way.
So what would you be sharing with non-Indigenous people that come out to work at the community about culture and this spiritual way of understanding the Tiwi people?
First, when I say go out in the community, or maybe go out in the bush. It's the first time you come over and go to the bush, there's a spirit there. You start to call out, Mutanga, Amutani, Amutanga, Amutani. Man was coming, Amutanga, lady comes in. We ask them, they're new to you, country, our country. So let your spirit to come and heal them. When we start to make fire and we heal them and we like call out, sometimes we cry because today we can say it's too much for us. We can't deal with those things set in the community, but we can have quiet times at bush with a friend, with a worker.
Right.
With their children.
So are you saying that introducing a new worker to the community is really healing for you as well?
Well, healing, we can believe because she's bringing good things to us.
Oh.
Because we don't understand before about this domestic violence and fighting around the community. So now today we can aware, feel that way and learn something that we understand about our way now.
That sounds like a beautiful mutual kind of relationship.
What?
In itself.
Mm.
A new worker comes in, you offer this healing and introduction to culture for them, and in some ways they're giving back by the knowledge they bring to help with the community. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe in a way, like your way and our way, you know? And we say, we don't have that, so we can learn more. They bring us good things, and we got to keep them in our heart, you know, our mind. So we can go ahead and say to our families or maybe friends, whatever, women together, come together and joy, healing. Say we're here. We never learned this before. And now we are learning. Give us strength, give us hope, go back in the community and help other women.
So it's really important that non-Indigenous people are coming out and sharing their knowledge around certain issues. And the community has a real thirst for knowledge, for learning new stuff, don't they? Yeah, I've experienced that myself. So we've talked a lot about knowledge. What sort of skills do you think that non-Indigenous workers can bring to the community that are really important?
Maybe helping whatever you do things for us, you know, and we sit there and look or listen, and then we get a skill. Because as we work with them, we need that. Skill of your area and my skill for helping each other. Women can understand two ways.
Yes.
English and Tiwi.
I'm sensing that it's very important that Tiwi people are actually employed to work alongside non-Indigenous people so that they're learning skills from the non-Indigenous people, and the non-Indigenous people are actually learning skills that the Tiwi people have. Is that right?
That's right, boy. Because we can learn both ways. If we don't do that, where we are, maybe we don't, and we worry about things, you know? Too much worry, too much this and that. But together we can make one, like who you are.
So you mentioned the skill of helping. Can you talk a bit more about what helping is helpful and what helping is not helpful?
Helpful of helping people is to look everything clear. What the structures are about put in places, you know? And we say, this is a good one. Because we don't listen, we don't hear that before. We don't hear, we don't listen to that before. But today, people can mind thinking and what words they can say and listening. And then after that, they write everything down.
Okay.
And like a platform, you know, they like get together. And then this is structure, we can do it two ways. Non-digital people or us coming together now and we can put the structure.
Is there some skills there in communication and how knowledge is shared with you and also recording that knowledge? Okay, and the way it's recorded and you being able to see the structure there. Is that right?
What?
Are there some things that workers should learn before they arrive in the community?
Sometimes we women, or maybe someone, women like men, maybe women, when we come together, we are not shy people. We listen, we can see what is happening. We learn a lot that though we can do it on our own. Sit around and do something for our people.
So does that mean non-Indigenous workers coming into the community should be aware that Tiwi people really want to do things for themselves? They want to be a self-determining people.
You yourself got to do those things because you are already learned from Tiwi group of women.
So one of the things we need to keep in mind if we're going out to a community for the first time is to be respectful of that community's knowledge and abilities to be self-determining. I just wanted to ask you a bit more about how non-Indigenous workers coming into the community can build trust with that community, because that's often a really difficult first step for people, new people that come. Do you have any ideas on how trust can be built with the people in the community?
I think to me, like, I can trust someone that I knew to come into the community, and then if I pass it on to someone that, hey, Matagaka, help me here. And we need that help, you know, that area. But the person was coming and we say, you come to our land, you need to listen. And then what we speak to you, we show you something good. This is not the no good one, but it's the good one. But we need you to support me in my way. But women here are needed for you to help us.
So the key there is listening first.
Listening.
And that helps to build trust.
Yeah. It's a trust because they knew and we knew to them. But in a sense of talking, listening to ourselves, they're the ones come together and listen.
Are there any other cultural protocols that people should follow when they first arrive on a community?
I tell you what, sometimes when I first worked in the clinic, cross cultures. And one time they were dressing up in something that we didn't like, you know? And some people that worked along with me. And I say,
so what were they wearing, or what was it that was offending you?
You know, dressing up in workplace that we didn't like it, you know. And we didn't grant them. We just go next day we have together group meeting, and we don't talk about those people. We just only putting our way of culture to them.
What was it they were wearing or not wearing that?
Long, you know, night, like hippies they do. But we had two ladies.
Hippie clothes.
Just like that, we sat down with them. We didn't growl at them. You go now. We have to respect ourselves too. Respecting this place, respecting our people, and a good place.
So what would you recommend as good clothing or proper clothing to wear out in the community? What would you be recommending?
Women wear dresses, women wear skirts and tops.
Right. So in summing up, what would be the most important thing for you in working alongside non-Indigenous social workers and counsellors?
Today I can see working along with the person or people who are coming in. I respect them and listening to them, showing me. And then after that, I love to show them my way.
So it's about them being open to hearing your stories.
Our stories.
And your knowledge.
Well, especially we say, maybe one day I take you out to bush. You can have that healing there. We tell them, you know, when they will frustration, we see them, a lot of work they do, and we take you out to bush, get some pandanus for us, making baskets, show you how to get colors. That's where we work together with a team leader who works around with us.
And you sort of suggested there that if you've seen the signs that people are being overworked or doing too much work, you might suggest taking them out bush.
Well, sometimes they say, oh, maybe not their own times, you know. We don't go and say, oh, what's wrong with you? You didn't come work now. We can see what's happening. And they don't get angry, we know.
So you can see that they're stressed. They don't have to tell you.
No.
And then you issue the invitation, let's go out bush, hey?
No. But then we go bush, maybe it's tired out. But we don't know the area, you know, like they can do the part at the workplace. But we can help them. We can see that.
I'm so glad that you've started talking about this idea of going out bush. Like I said in the introduction, you, Elaine, have been very involved in the development of resources to help strong Aboriginal women like yourself have conversations with more vulnerable women in the community around domestic violence and its effect on children. This is something we've been working on since about 2010. And much of our action research initially involved collecting stories from Tiwi women about traditional ways of healing and child-rearing practices for raising strong and healthy kids. And in all the time that I've worked with you out there, I often hear the same thing said to me by women over and over again about going out bush and that being the best remedy for healing. Whether that's for kids that are going off the rails and causing all sorts of problems around the community, or whether it's people suffering from mental health problems or wrong thinking as it's known around your community, or whether that's people who are drinking too much and need to sober up, or whether it's families who are stressed out from problems like gambling, humbug or violence. So what's your perspective on this? Why is going out bush a good form of treatment for many of the health and well-being issues that we see in children, adults and families?
One thing I had this couple of days, weeks ago, I was just worrying about my children because they got problems drinking and fighting. And up to all, every time I sleep, when I say, Rangani, you're the only one can do a miracle.
Is that you talking to God? Or
what? Asking him, spirit. I want this kid to go out in the bush. And what I did, I took that young boy. One time he saw me coming in the car, going out the bush. I had my little stick and I opened the car. I didn't worry about the, my children, but a young five-year-old kid came along.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? I'm going to help you. What do you mean you're helping me? I'm right. No. You're old. And I said, all right, we go. So out in the bush, he was keeping me in company. And I always seeing him, Nena, look muscle. Nena, muscle. And my thinking today, why worrying? Taking him out because he found something good, like I'm teaching him and the other grandchildren. My daughter and the other grandchildren, girls and boys, came with us. She's got her own children and I had my own grandchild. And when I took them out bush, I was holding my stick, walking stick. You right, Nena? Yeah, I'm right. Oh, Ma, you right? Yeah, I'm right. Just go for look for something what you want. You got mom there, and I'm teaching you. Every time we go around and see, Nana, I look up to you here. Just maybe learning, not focusing on his mom or dad. And I was very disappointed as well when I came back because the mother didn't come with me. And I said to her, it's your choice. It's not my choice. It's you to speak out something about yourself. A little boy, 3 years old kid came out with me knowing that I learned something about my grandmother teaching me.
So that's the healing part for that little boy. He was learning from his grandmother.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that things weren't good with his mum and dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even those kids, their father, the same night that every drama is going around in the community, they put himself in the car, push. And you know those kids, young girls too, that poor young girl, they might, Nana, you right? Yeah, but I was sleeping and people were tired, were walking. It's my journey. Mm-hmm. So you kids to carry a bag, walking along the muddy, looking for mussels, chopping wood, mangroves, crabs.
So that's healing for you too, to take your grandkids out there and show them the bush.
Me not talk now. It's me that I had my spirit in me. And this comes along that new young boys, young kids. There he goes, learning something good. Forget about what's happening.
So you're taking these kids out bush, right, where they're learning something new and they're away from the problems in their family. Mm. And can you talk about some of the bush medicine that's out there? Because that's healing too, isn't it, for people that have different illnesses or a disease or ailments that needs curing and maybe Western medicine can't help?
A couple of months ago in April and May, I think, young boy was really sick. Sores everywhere, and little baby sores, and that brought to me. What healing we can, medicine put in here? Wait, I went out, not far from my house, got the tree that's got the birds, they sort of land on that and they eat the leaf and it's got dots. And
is it a particular type of tree that you're talking about?
Well, the tree that always makes cleanness with their skin, you know? Get better, and when they get sick, we get that fruit that got yellow. What's it called? Kimjinga. We chew, sometimes we bust, and I chop them, and then put them, boil them, drink out of that.
Ah.
But our grand, our mother say, a hen's nest lay on the tree, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Get that one, boiling them, put them in the cold, when they're ready to make them bad, you can diarrhea for diarrhea to that.
Right. So it sounds like the bush is a big medicine bowl.
There's always say a tree of life, because we can feel what this tree is about. And we say to our children, you don't knock this tree. When you come at bush, this is a sacred tree. This one, that other sort of trees that give us the shade, is the one that we can put and make a shade. Maybe the main one tree that you're not allowed to chop it. I did once add that, I chopped it down and the tree slapped my face and then I fall over.
Ah, was that some sort of punishment for chopping it down?
Maybe chopping down. And what's wrong with me? That branch, you know, from spirit around us.
Can you speak a bit more about the ways trees communicate with you?
My great-grandmother said to me when I was growing up, if you chop the tree, you won't grow, you won't have any leaves. People will pass away. They get sick and pass away. But I didn't know anything about it, you know.
Wow.
Growing up like that, I don't care anything about what old people say, you know. Because I'm new growing up, until later they say, this is not right, the tree is for you to heal yourself, get better with it. And that got nurse, that's another one to boil them. That's the tree that you don't ever knock down.
Do you think your great-grandmother was also giving us some messages about caring for the land and caring for the country? Because our earth is in a bit of dire straits at the moment, isn't it? We're chopping down trees around the world at an alarming rate, and we are getting sick as a people with the trauma we're causing the planet. And I'm wondering whether your great-grandmother had some wisdom in what she was saying. Don't chop this tree down because you'll get sick.
And one lady said to us one time with a group of women when we were growing up, maybe 13, 14 year old, she got a tummy ache. I remember her saying, you see this axe, you keep this land not away. What do you mean? This lady can come in by anybody, we said to her. You got wrong thought. These white people, they come talk to you about the land because this land is yours. From your father and your mother, that my children were looking after you, mom growing up.
So she was talking about the responsibilities you had to the land.
Yeah. And today we say, kids, kolo, kolo, don't chop them down. Kolo, chitty, chitty, we say. Not good. Leave it like that growing up. And we say, if we burn them, they grow. They grow up to a big, nice tree.
So sometimes burning off is good?
Well, things burn it out because for us to, you know, live in the land. But we still call it.
And one of the things that I noticed after the burn off is that the seed pods burst and new growth happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, we see a lot of four things coming up now. Trees grow. No chopping down, make a hole in that.
So we haven't spoken much about ceremonies, and I know that ceremonies are often healing too when you do these out bush, and you actually use parts of the tree, don't you, in ceremonies. Can you speak a bit about that?
The ironwood is the one that they do carving. When they do cemetery poles, that the ironwood is the main one to do it. They chop them down and they do, not the old way, before they used to do the axe, you know, and special, what they call that, ritual they have long time ago. Stones, they had special stick to chop them down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't use that now. We can use whatever.
Modern axe.
You know what I mean?
So the men carve the ironwood tree to create pukamani poles. Mm. And what are they used for? Do you want to explain?
Mainly they use for, we use culture outside, out in the bush, because they take the man being buried there in his own country. Like, say, Tantipi. We have few cultures there with dancing ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back for next day. We sent messages to people to come, and some of them, our family comes around and stay in that country and call it. They sing in their own times, you know, old people. And then we listen to those old people. So after, in the morning, they come up and burn all the grass, you know, ready for the ceremony. We had, I think, really two times we had ceremony there where our great-grandfather was buried for a long time. And now uncle buried there and we make ceremony there. But the pole is still there.
And I imagine those ceremonies are really important for people working through their grief and their mourning and their loss. And that's an important part of healing too, isn't it?
We can see people when they start to clap, you know, with a stick and call out, start to sing about their pass on, you know, people pass away. And we start to have that sadness in ourselves, you know. He's gone and we don't have him, but his spirit lives on.
And how do you express that sadness and that grief?
As you feel that it's emptiness, then spirit comes in to fill up, fill the way we feel to them and say, he's here with us, she's here with us, he maybe slept with us last night, he made a big fire.
So that's the spirit of the person that's passed away?
Passed away, what?
And you feel that presence?
Person, what person, we feel the presence. Sometimes people they see as shadows in the light, in the light. And they say, it was here.
Ah, so they see the spirits visiting them?
Visiting them, okay. When they make fire at night. And they say, someone made fire here, maybe Amane made fire, or Amma made fire. Family came here with us.
And what sorts of feelings does that bring when you have that sense of their presence?
It's good because he's present to us. He's never far away from us. Maybe if we have problem, maybe at, in the community, and we come to that land and we say, we run away. There's a lot of things happening in our community. You've got to look after me. Bring the good things to us that we can pass it on to our children.
And what are some of the other ceremonies that you do out bush, or you use the leaves from the trees for? Can you speak about some of those other ceremonies for healing?
Sometimes they cut a special tree that Kulama, they have. When they sing Kulama, they put sticks, their special sticks, they cut down branches like, so I say this tree got sort of like that, and they put it on the fire. I mean, they make little circles. Fire is already there for the Kulama. They name the person, and that name is given to Charlie's born.
So it's a naming ceremony?
Naming ceremony. Sometimes they raise up when the first rain comes in, they put that, they know that it's a coming up rain season. And they say, they are among the Kichini, or Rangani, look after this young one, it's new to the world. That is the one that given name to that ceremony, the Kulama ceremony.
Right, okay. Yeah. I guess that's healing for that baby and that family of that baby, yeah?
Happy, we're happy about it, giving name to the person, and just gone and giving back his name, Kiwi name, so we can keep on life of the young boy or young girl.
And can you speak a bit more about the smoking ceremony and how that's used, I guess, for emotional healing?
Well, sometimes when we sit there lonely, when we think too much, you know what's happening? And we say, how come I'm not with those other women who are their families, you know? And we say ourselves, you know?
So is this someone that might be sad?
What? Yeah,
depressed? Lonely?
Maybe lonely because who cares? They say themselves, you know?
No one cares about them?
Well, and then later on, family comes, we go now, we go bush, ready to pack up, go, because of they know what's happening in themselves, and they share that out openly in the bush.
And you do smoking ceremony out there?
Yeah, smoking ceremony.
Right.
You light the fire, go around. Even students who come in from other places, especially we had St. Ignatius College boys, we introduced them about the country. And we were buried here, and healing around the fire, dancing, then singing, praise.
And what's the purpose of that ceremony and that situation? Is it about generating good spirit, bringing good spirit in?
I think so. I think the spirit that people believe, they maybe carry on and they go out, go to the country, because they already learn about what they've seen and hear, and the good spirit is with them, when, especially when we say Nupanga Matani, Nupanga Matama, spirit with you, because we know, they knew, and we know that there's someone there with them, taking that spirit back, and because they learn something, they see it.
Right. And what about people who have mental health issues? Is there ceremonies you can do for them?
Well, sometimes we used to, before long time ago, I remember this young boy was having this problem. Our family, he passed away, but he was so young, in his 20s. And he was, sometimes when you see him under the tree, mango tree, the whole family came because his mother was worried about the boy who didn't go to sleep, and he works at night, and maybe he's got mind not good. We say, we help him. We're talking to him by healing.
Ah.
Hold him, get special leaf, put in his ears and his head, in his eyes, every body, everywhere his body. We smoke him.
Right. So it's not through talking that you heal him, it's the bush. That's healing him. Is that right?
His mum say, no, day and night, talk. But we can heal him by getting something that out in the bush, bring an app shower with water. They must be the healing place where we go, this Tantipi. We call out to that old man, who buried. He can help this young boy you can give us spiritual healing. You too come in and that and heal him. And then next morning we got up and saw him going to have a swim in the river. We look at that and we were glad.
Ah, so something had changed.
We don't say, hey, you pupuni. No, we let him be. And the mother said, hey, come back, come back, come back. No, leave him. Let him do his own things. He'll come back. We still look at him because he's still walking around, but we keep an eye on him.
And so did it make a difference with his mind?
I think his mind maybe a little bit ahead that, and thinking about these people caring for me.
And you mentioned the water there. What role does water play in healing?
I think when we have those, we feel like something is not right for us, you know, like maybe frustration inside the asshole and worrying about something else that we're not in the right place, you know. And we say, hey, Guru, maybe something wrong with me. I have to go and do something. So, where are you going, Matani? Where are you going, Matani? They don't worry. They just go in and do their own things because they know. It's like hot flesh.
A hot flush?
Cool.
Right.
Maybe in their mind, maybe in their body. And we just go and have shower. They go and have shower. That's what I feel sometimes when I have things in me.
Mm-hmm. So there's something about water too that has healing properties.
Healing, bringing water, and we call it, ah, like a molecule in my mind. We haven't showered. Look at grass. Bad things away. Chuck them that bad thing. Sometimes we blow.
So it'd be a nice way to finish, Elaine, if you might be able to share, I guess, a personal story about a healing experience that you've had out in the bush.
This story is about a young girl we took out bush. She was adopted away from our culture, our families. When she grew up, she never knew about country. She never knew about her family, her grandparents. She never knew about TV language. And afterwards, she came back. And the first time when we took her out, it was so beautiful. Because me and my other sister and other cousins came along. She did her own things because she stood at the beach. We went up the hill, you know, we saw her running, walking, rolling herself in the sea. Mm. In a little mud somewhere in there, not mud, but a pool, little pool. Came back wet and wet. And she said, look, there she comes. And she saw us sitting there now. And she said, what are you doing? We got butcher paper here and do something good. What you did there at in the beach. She made a picture first. She made a big face, hey, and a tooth upside down. When we look at that picture, and we said, that was me. Me in my face, that I never been here. I see your grandmother's helping me. So after that, we made a fire, healing fire. And when we were singing, all of a sudden we cried, maybe cry of joy by learning. She'd learn new things to us. And we know that she need to go on with her life to make a real person who identified herself, who she is. And when we read the story about healing, she read it.
You not only offered the traditional smoking ceremony, but you also read some prayers,
didn't you? Prayer, yeah. In a way, you know, we do healings with prayer. She read it herself, and we cried for her, and we put her around her arms with her, with the smoking, you know, ceremony. I mean, the smoke healing with us, because there's a wonderful thing that we see, that she done something steady in her life, slowly learning. Because the past that she's not learning, now she sees it really clear in herself.
So she had quite a difficult journey up until that point when she was reunited with family culture.
Yeah. I think she was in this deep, deep sadness or deep emotional, not knowing.
Not knowing who she was and as a Tiwi person.
Not understanding about Tiwi culture.
Right.
And now today she learned a little bit about that now. She's been going to school in Kiwi way and learn Kiwi language. Helped Ren and help her grandmother. When I went there and she was helping her grandmother, everything in the shopping, and say, you go to school? Yeah, I go to school. Sometimes we get information from the school that she wasn't at school, but we talk to her. School is very important for you to learn Kiwi culture. We said to her, you've been naughty, naughty girl today. And she came and said, naughty. But she wasn't growling. She's letting her know what's happening to you. We care about you. Go to school and learn something good. Kiwi way and Murtari way, English way.
And did you notice a change in that sadness that you talked about that she came with?
Well, I think there were changes because when she left Nuyo, her grandmother came for, she's on dialysis, come and visit her grandmother every time. And her father as well. He was at CAPS. She went and visited him. She done lovely things that she, her grandmother and her father didn't do those things when she was a baby. She was taken away. So today we see she's doing her own things that going forward to helping herself, what belongs to her.
And what she missed out on.
What she missed out.
I'm glad you mentioned that story, Elaine, because part of that story that you didn't talk about was how that was a collaborative effort between what was known as the Department of Children and Families at the time, Relationships Australia, and the strong women of the community. And for me to be involved in that story and to help that girl go out bush and access the healing she needed from women like you was so special, and I noticed the big changes in her. And I think it's a really good example of how a collaboration can work to really acknowledge the skills and the knowledge that Tiwi people have in bringing healing to people's lives. So thank you for sharing that story.
I saw it the other day.
And I'm aware that we're running out of time, so I just wanted to thank you so much for speaking with me this afternoon about your experience working alongside non-Indigenous social workers and counsellors, and also sharing your wisdom around the healing power of the bush. So thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Pupuni Ramani mean good messages for you too, both you and I have spoken out.
Mana.
Mana. Nimpangi Mantana.
Nimpangi Mantana.
Thanks for listening to Talk the Walk, the podcast putting legs on social work in Indigenous communities through story, music by Flashback Digital. You can access all the show notes from today's podcast at www.metaphorically-speaking.com.au. I'm currently on the lookout for inspiring interviewees. If you or someone you know is walking the talk in their work or community, then I'd love to hear from you. You can drop me an email at lucy@metaphorically-speaking.com.au or visit my contact page on the Metaphorically Speaking website. Until next time, just keep on walking.